You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody. My name's Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We have quite a busy day for each and every one of you. We're going to start out the afternoon with Professor Lowell Barrington. He is a professor of political science and associate professor at Marquette University. His teaching and specialization include post-communist politics, nationalism, democratization. He is an expert. We're going to talk about Ukraine, what occurred on Friday, what continues to transpire in the news. And we're going to finish out today's show, continuing our discussion about Ukraine, about Western Europe, about the United States' role in foreign policy, in the world order as a hegemon. We're going to be joined by Karina Tweedwell. She is with Wisconsin Ukrainians. They held a march, a protest, if you will, this Saturday. So we're going to have a very Ukraine and foreign policy heavy show today. And at 3 p.m., we're going to be joined by Greta Bedakovics of the Center for American Progress Action Fund. We're going to be talking about that SAVE Act and how it may disenfranchise tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of Wisconsinites. People may lose their vote if the SAVE Act is signed into law. And at the bottom of this half hour, I'm going to talk to you about the Republican, the House budget bill. Because both Ron Johnson and Congressman Van Orton and Congressman Steil have been saying the budget resolution doesn't say anything about cuts, and we need to debunk the lies that are being told about that with some basic mathematics. So you're not going to want to go anywhere. We got 2 hours of packed content for you today. I want to bring Professor Barrington onto the show. Thank you so much for making time, Professor Barrington. It has been quite a tumultuous past 3 days.
It certainly has been. I think even the things we've forgotten already because of Friday, like the U.S. voting against the condemnation of Russia at the United Nations and things just in the immediate rearview mirror seem like they've already been a month ago.
Yes, that UN vote is certainly was a harbinger of what was then to come this past Friday in the Oval Office. I want to dig right in. Many headlines over the weekend, Professor, raising the question, can our NATO allies continue to rely on the United States? Can our Western allies, democracies, fledgling democracies, continue to rely on the United States under President Trump? What is your take, Professor Barrington?
Well, there's kind of two pieces to that question. One is the bigger picture international relations question, and maybe I'll come back to that. But in terms of the immediate perception in Europe and perception of smaller allies, it's very concerning. One of the maybe unintended consequences of what happened on Friday is that there has been a swift and almost completely unified response by Europe to support Ukraine and to really start talking seriously about a much more Europe-focused defense strategy without the U.S. There's a British political scientist who was discussing, the conversation had been going into Friday, can Europe just get a seat at the table for these negotiations, right? And he said, that's the wrong question. The right question now is, can Europe build a new table? And I think that's where they are. They feel like we'd, you know, look, the first Trump administration, there were, you know, there were a lot of challenges for Europe. And it took a long time after 2020 to rebuild those connections and really get our allies back into feeling pretty confident about us and our support. This is one of these, you know, fool me once, fool me twice things. I think that there's a real sharp break. And ultimately, you know, February 28th, 2025 is going to be remembered as, I think, a pretty key date.
I agree. Folks, if you're just joining us, this is the Maggie Dawn Show. We're speaking with Marquette University Associate Professor in the Department of Political Scientist and expert on democratization, post-Soviet Union, Europe. And we're speaking about the last week plus of news surrounding and catalyzed in a different way by the Oval Office meeting amongst President Trump, Vice President Vance, and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. You speak of building a new table, that our European allies, whom for 80, 85 years coming out of World War II, very much viewed the United States as a reliable actor in the foreign policy realm. Some distinctions between Republican and Democratic presidents, but for the most part, an absolute unwavering commitment from the United States, one, to stand by our obligations under NATO, the strongest, most long-lasting military alliance in human history, and secondly, to stand up for these principles of democracy, self-determination, the importance of sovereign boundaries, borders, excuse me. And as John F. Kennedy said on January 9th, 1961, that the eyes of all people are upon us and our governments in every branch, at every level, national, state, and local, that we must be as a city upon a hill constructed and inhabited by people aware of their great trust and their great responsibilities. My question, Professor, is this: is NATO fracturing? Has the United States now reached a tipping point where our allies in NATO can't really rely on our military commitments under that alliance? And if NATO is no more, then what next?
I'm not sure I would go as far as to say it's no more, but the heart of NATO, the thing that is everything that really holds it together, is the Article 5 understanding that an attack on any NATO member is an attack on all. And if I were the, you know, the government of Estonia right now, I might be pretty concerned if Putin were to try to sort of do, you know, poke around, move across the border a little bit, go back, see what happens. That while there might be a European response, the U.S. response right now is actually pretty unclear. And again, there's a long context to the Russia-Ukraine topic, but on the NATO piece itself, I mean, we shouldn't be real surprised about this. I think there was reason to think that if President Trump had won in 2020, that he was going to move against U.S. membership in NATO and work to kind of break it apart. And part of that, again, is this has been a longstanding issue for Putin. And I want to highlight one thing about NATO expansion, because, again, whether we think they should or not, Russian leaders have felt genuinely threatened by NATO expansion. And, you know, objectively, we can talk about why that might be, that, you know, when Putin came to power, and since that time, NATO's added 16 countries, so it's kind of doubled its size, most of that movement obviously toward Russia, right? So there's this real genuine sense of that on the Russian side. And I think that, you know, one of those is that Putin is strategic, but he's a true believer about some things, and that NATO is dangerous is a real
It's a core belief, yes.
Mm-hmm. It is. And so for him, Friday was a huge win because, and in fact, I don't know if you've seen the statements out of the Russian government about,
yes,
you know, that they're sort of praising our new direction foreign policy, how it largely aligns with Russia's position, all of that, right? So I do think that in that way, what we have thought of as NATO is not as obvious as it's in place in a strong way. But again, I do think that there is going to be a unified European approach that will initially exist, you know, alongside NATO. Whether it replaces it, I don't know. This is something that in 2 years or even 4 years, we may be back to a strong U.S.-Europe alliance. right now, it doesn't look like that.
Folks, again, this is Professor Lowell Barrington, an associate professor of political science at Marquette University. You were referencing these statements that have come out of the Kremlin and out of Russia after the meeting. This is from the Moscow Times on March 1st. So this was just on Saturday. Quote, the new administration is rapidly changing all foreign policy configurations. This largely aligns with our new vision. This was a quote in the Moscow Times on Saturday from Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov. So Moscow views this favorably. Can Europe, without the United States, secure itself, either in an arrangement that perhaps runs parallel to NATO, Professor? Can they afford to secure themselves? Do those calculations change if you see additional Russian, what's the word I'm looking for, rumblings, whether it be Poland or Estonia or another member? Does Europe have both the financial and military capacity to, in effect, defend itself?
I think they have the economic capacity. I think they have the eventual military capacity. You know, one of the things we've seen, and again, as we think about history, this is not a great thing maybe, but we've seen Germany, for example, start to spend a lot more on its military in the last few years. I think there is a sense that Europe understands that it needs to do more on its own in this way. But there's a piece of your question, I think, that from a, and look, I don't think President Trump was thinking of it in this way. I doubt he has thought this through from a kind of theories of international relations standpoint. But what his actions point to right now is this sort of odd multilateral international order that, I mean, represents really a sharp break both of the post-World War II order and the post-Cold War order. And I've heard a couple people say this is something I thought about in the last couple of days too, but it really is resembling more and more a kind of mid to late 19th century great power focused approach.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we all know what came after the late 19th century. We got into the 20th century with two world wars. So yes, the question immediately, especially for someone like Zelensky, does Europe have the capacity to defend itself? Absolutely. It's got a much, you know, much larger economy and military force even potentially than a country like Russia would have. But the real question is, are we moving into a place that ultimately is not as stable as we've been?
Folks, that's Professor Lowell Barrington of Marquette University's Political Science Department. We're going to dig in after the break. What happens with this vacuum, with the United States stepping back? What can we expect as Americans? Are we as safe today as we were on Thursday? Those questions with Professor Barrington next on The Maggie Dawn Show, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
Keep on running, cause the winner don't quit on themselves.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everyone. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We are talking this half hour with Marquette Associate Professor in the Political Science Department, Lowell Barrington. Very appreciative of your time, Professor. Before the break, you were starting to get into a description of sort of how global hegemons, or for people that don't know the wonky terms, how large global powers can choose to interact. And you were hearkening back to a period before the turn of the century and into the early 1900s, where we had what foreign policy wonks and people that study political science, as you do, called the great power approach. And I was wondering if you could explain a bit more about that and what that would mean for sort of a new world order, if you will, specifically as the United States continues to step back into what many could describe as a neo-isolationist foreign policy stance, with overtures being made to regimes that in the past were frankly off limits, like Vladimir Putin's Russia. What does this mean for U.S. national security interests, especially when we consider, for example, that Defense Secretary Hegseth also announced, I believe on Friday or Saturday, that the U.S. Cyber Command, he directed them to stop all activities and actions that were offensive digital actions involving Russia. What does this mean for U.S. national security, for the safety of our country, given, again, these preconditions that we've been discussing?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. I think that decision had been made, obviously, in advance of Friday, probably by quite a bit, but it is important to link that decision about ending offensive cyber activities against Russia in with what happened on Friday. I think that is right. The great power idea is that, you know, the world gets kind of carved up into different realms, and great powers fight it out sometimes in larger wars, sometimes in smaller wars. But it's really this emphasis on those who have power get to do what they want. And it's a competition instead of a cooperation approach that I think we also see it as a big move away from what is often called soft power, mm-hmm. this idea of diplomacy and aid, right? I mean, I think, again, lost in the shuffle is our decision to essentially abandon USAID activities
right.
around the world, which is, compared to military spending, an incredibly cheap investment in goodwill and connections around the world. So I think that that's one of the things that we're seeing here. And so, I was kind of joking before about not thinking that President Trump thinks in these international relations theoretical terms. But he does think in terms of those with power get to do what they want and do it kind of quickly. I would say the other thing about the situation we're moving into is someone who thinks in the immediate term, whether it's been this business situation, not always thinking 10, 15 years down the road. And one thing I'd mention about Friday, because I haven't heard a lot of people talk about this, is President Trump also got a small win. I mean, Putin was the big winner, but President Trump got a small win because he was able to portray, maybe incorrectly, but portray Ukraine as not ready for peace. And so he can now say, well, okay, I tried. They're just not ready. It's not going to work. And basically can explain away his campaign claim that he would end the war between Ukraine and Russia in one day if he just got into office. And so his idea now will be, well, Ukraine just doesn't want that kind of peace.
If I may, just to intersect these ideas, again, the great power concept from the prior turn of the century being, if you have power, you get to do what you want as you will. And this idea of Trump spinning Zelensky and Ukraine as not ready for peace, the key here is not ready for peace on terms dictated by the great powers, right? That we're not picking our allies based on having vibrant democracies, being a fledgling democracy, observing a free press, protecting human rights. That was as much what the U.S. expenditures to create soft power over the last near century were about, right? To help support growing democracies, to oppose oppressive regimes, and that this intersection is very real. The idea that two great powers would simply dictate to a third country the terms at which they will accept peace or be destroyed has not been a concept we have seen embraced on any international stage or circumstance by the United States for nearly a century.
Yeah, I'll take a step even beyond that. I think, and you had a JFK quote earlier
yes.
on today, and I'll throw out a Ronald Reagan quote, which is there's no argument about the choice between peace and war, but there's only one guaranteed way you can have peace, and you can have it really quickly, and that's to surrender. And so I think there's this sense that right now what we have is Ukraine is the one who's weak. They're the one who, you know, the war isn't going well. So they don't get to determine what's going to happen. They don't get to have a say in that. And it's really for the countries like, you know, Russia and the U.S. to figure out how to handle that situation. And again, that's a really concerning turn away from things that we've, you know, traditionally thought of in international relations for quite a while now, as you said, but also for a body like NATO. I mean, the whole idea of NATO is you don't get to tell a NATO member or even allies of NATO that we're going to tell you when you get to surrender, and it's just going to be entirely on our terms. And NATO has been successful precisely because that's not how we've been acting.
Professor, we've got just about a minute left. Can you speak to the people of Wisconsin? Let them know, what does this mean for Wisconsinites? What does this mean for families that may have sons and daughters that are serving in our military?
Yeah, I think one of the bigger picture issues here is a perception that the U.S. can essentially isolate on its own terms, that it can back out of inconvenient things internationally that it feels like should be somebody else's problem, but then just interject itself whenever it wants to on other things. And again, that has been tried in the past, and the outcome hasn't been a very good one.
Folks, that is Professor Lowell Barrington, Associate Professor of Political Science at Marquette University. Professor, thank you so much for your insights. I'd love to have you back sometime to continue this discussion.
Thank you, Maggie. I appreciate it.
I'm Maggie Dawn, everyone. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. When we come back, we'll talk about the lies being told to you about cuts to Social Security and other benefits by Wisconsin's very own Senators Ron Johnson and Representative Van Orton, Steyl, Tiffany, and the rest of them. Keep it locked right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everyone. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. A big thanks to Professor Lowell Barrington, an Associate Professor of Political Science at Marquette University. Before I move on to the lies that are being told to all of us, no matter who we voted for, about these certain cuts to Medicare, Medicaid, veterans benefits, and Social Security, if Donald Trump's big, beautiful bill that the House adopted last week for the budget is eventually made into law. I wanted to take a moment to address some comments that I made this past Friday on this very show. We had just listened to, I had with my team just listened to the Oval Office meeting. As someone who has studied foreign policy for much of my life, considered going into the Foreign Service, as someone who is motivated by the very idea that simply because you can impose your will on others, doesn't make it right. As I put it on this show many times, I have always stood up to bullies. And as Professor Barrington was explaining in our last segment, what we're seeing now is the United States adopting a foreign policy and, in fact, domestic policy where might equals right in all circumstances. Where if you can impose your will on others, you should and you will. Regardless of its morality, regardless of its long or even medium-term impacts on others. And I had just listened to what I thought was one of the most shocking exchanges I have ever read about in the history books, or certainly seen in my 48 years on this planet, that occurred between two supposed allies. And in my discussion of that topic on Friday, my alarm, my deep emotional response to the United States adopting an approach to the world where might equals right and we will take what we want and impose our will got the better of me. And I used an expression which I will not repeat in this show on Friday. And I just wanted to share with each and every one of you and anyone who may be have been offended by what I said, that you all deserve better from me. That the seriousness of these matters means that we have to rise above the most base rhetoric. So to those I may have offended, you have my apology. And I hope that you all understand that we are all human beings trying to work through this. And you deserve me not to show up as a human being with all of my frailties, but as a professional on these airwaves. And I didn't achieve that standard on Friday. But I offer you my human apology that I was very emotional and upset, and that I will always continue to stand up to bullies. It is not an American value to impose our will simply because we can. And it seems to me the through line between what Professor Barrington was sharing with us about the changes to American foreign policy, we also see now in domestic matters here. That if Republicans can, if they can impose their will on the middle class to subsidize and provide welfare for billionaires and corporations, they will. Not because it's right, but because they can. Seems to me that Republicans will strip away your Social Security benefits, veterans benefits, Medicare and Medicaid, the things that help keep your family and mine safe and healthy and alive, not because they should, but because they can, all under the guise of efficiency. And I'm going to get into the math. I'm going to tell you why when Representatives Van Orten, Steele, Tiffany, Weed, who am I forgetting? A couple more. And of course, Senator Johnson, when they tell you, what are the Democrats freaking out about? There's not even the word Social Security in the House budget bill. I'm going to explain the math and why that is a lie. But before we get there, I need to share some breaking news with you all because we're all about real news here on Civic Media. And I want us to keep in mind as we move through these days that sometimes seem like weeks, these weeks that seem like years, that the United States has never been in the business of imposing our will simply because we can. And when we have done so, it has been at grave harm, sometimes irreparable harm, to the project and promise we made to one another as citizens in our Declaration of Independence, our Constitution, and our Bill of Rights. Here is the breaking news of the hour. JFK's top spokesperson, Tom Corey, has abruptly resigned after 2 weeks on the job. And reporting coming from a press conference that happened about an hour ago, this from the New York Times, Donald Trump has threatened to potentially suspend or completely cancel all military aid to Ukraine, including weapons pledged by the Biden administration. And in response to that tidbit, I will say this. Not only is it not an American value to impose our will, regardless of whether it's right or not, simply because we can, it also hasn't been a hallmark of American values to be thin-skinned and knee-jerk and to try to punish allies for substantively harmless or completely perceived slights. And the last bit of, I'm going to call it shocking and seismic breaking news, is that U.S. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth has warned Mexican officials that if Mexico does not crack down on cartels and corruption amongst the Mexican government and cartels, the United States military will take unilateral action. Professor Barrington's words about the great power theory and that might made right before the turn of the century, the 18th century moving into the 19th century, and that those approaches to the wielding of power in different hemispheres, that if you had the power to impose your will, that made it right. You could maraud and invade and do whatever you chose as long as you had the bankroll and the troops to do so. And the dangerousness, the table setting, that approach to world order gave us, that approach begat not just one, but two world wars, certainly echoes in U.S. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth's announcement that we may invade Mexico, apparently. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-75-CIVIC. Just a reminder, folks, if you are a new caller, if you are a woman, a conservative, or a veteran, please let my producer Calvin know. He's going to make a note of that. You're going to go right to the top of the caller line. Charles from Milwaukee, you've been patient, sir. What's on your mind this afternoon?
Hey, Maggie. You know, my wife would tell you, I have a saying, just because you can doesn't mean you should. Because
yes.
At the end of the day, somebody on the other end is going to get hurt. And it's sad that not only did Kamala Harris tell us what was going to happen with Trump and the whole Russia thing, and Hillary Clinton told us, two women that ran to be president of this country, that people couldn't stomach putting a woman into that seat. And now we have a guy in there that is, I believe he is dead set on destroying this country. No ifs, and buts about it.
Charles, thanks so much for your call this afternoon. Liz Cheney warned us about it. Some of Trump's own hand-picked generals warned us about what we see happening today. And Trump's entire life's history has shown us that time and time again, his entire modus operandi is that if I can, I should, and I will, that might does equal right. But we all know better than that. And we deserve so much better than that. We deserve a president, in my opinion, that thinks more than more than just one step ahead. So as we alienate our former allies here in this hemisphere, to our north in Canada and to our south in Mexico, as Donald Trump is slated to impose tariffs on both of those allies tomorrow, as we alienate our near centuries-long allyship with the democracies of Western Europe, to what end? I'm going to turn the page now and talk about this same idea of might equaling right, that if I can, I should. If I can rob from the poor to give to the rich, well, that's just fine as long as it works for me, which seems to be Donald Trump's approach to budgeting and tax cuts. As you are aware, the House adopted a budget that was dictated to them by Donald Trump. One big, beautiful bill. And the response from regular Americans across the country last week on Monday, we listened to a bunch of the town halls where regular people like you and me stood up and told their MAGA elected representatives that stealing from the poor, from working people, to give tax cuts to billionaires and 100 millionaires and the world's wealthiest corporations is not what they were elected to do. We watched Republican after Republican after Republican say things like this. Today's budget resolution did not include any cuts to specific programs. Anyone saying otherwise is lying and engaging in the fear-mongering our farmers, veterans, seniors, and most vulnerable populations do not deserve. The budget resolution simply sets the framework for how the federal government can be better stewards of taxpayer dollars. Millions of Americans depend on Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, and I will have no part in cutting these programs for the folks that are legally entitled to them. That's what we've heard. Which sounds reasonable. But it's a lie. And they all know it. I'm going to break down the math that every single Wisconsin congressman and Senator Ron Johnson know means that they are damn well, yes, preparing to cut your Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, veterans benefits, food stamps, and education funding. It matters to you and your family. I'm going to show you that math live on the radio, if you can believe it. When we come back, my name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join us, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Women, vets, conservatives, and first-time callers, you go to the front of the line. Back with more in just a moment. It's a rich man's
world. It's a rich man. You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're talking about the fact that Republicans introduced and passed in the House of Representatives a budget bill that necessitates cuts to things like Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, veterans benefits, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And my good friend, Mark from Sussex. Hi, Mark. One of my conservative callers and texters is saying, you Dems have been freaking out about this stuff for 40 years and it's never happened. Yes, because while Republicans have repeatedly said for a very long time that they want to cut these things, it was generally considered to be the third rail of politics. Like, you can't actually do it. Now, let's just refresh our collective recollection, shall we? We're going to listen to some Republicans talking about cutting Medicare, Social Security, and Medicaid this year. All right? This year and late last year. Let's start with Representative Gomez, just in January, right before the first meeting of the Doge Caucus. Cal, this is Cut 6.
We're going to just keep asking members of the caucus as they come in. Sir, can we get a pledge to stand with President Trump against cuts to Social Security and Medicare benefits?
I think, you know what, when we look to reduce our national debt, I think these should be on the table.
Okay.
You know, so I am a strong advocate of discussing this and reevaluating them. And I do believe at the end of the day, there will be some cuts.
There are cuts to Social Security and Medicare.
Yes.
And that's on the table in the Doge caucus right now.
Well, we're about to find out.
Okay. Thank you so much. So there you have a member of the Doge committee, the Doge caucus, fully supporting cuts to Social Security and Medicare, ignoring the president. Sir, I was hoping.
Now let's listen to Donald Trump actually say, yeah, let's look at cuts to those things. This is going to be cut 11, Cal, if you wouldn't mind, please, sir.
So first of all, there is a lot you can do in terms of entitlements.
And Cal, you cut it a little early. He says, there is a lot you can do in terms of entitlements and cutting. Really important to have that last part. We'll get that sound cleaned up for you. Let's move on. Let's look closer to home, shall we? This is Senator Ron Johnson talking about zeroing out Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. Let's take cut 7.
Yes, and you know, defense spending has always been discretionary. So VA spending is discretionary. What's mandatory are things like Social Security and Medicare. If you qualify for the entitlement, you just get it no matter what the cost. And our problem in this country is that more than 70% of our federal budget, of our federal spending, is all mandatory spending. It's on automatic pilot. You just don't do proper oversight. You don't get in there and fix the programs going bankrupt. It's just on automatic pilot. What we ought to be doing is we ought to turn everything into discretionary spending, so it's all evaluated, so that we can fix problems or fix programs that are broken, that are going to be going bankrupt. No. Because, again, as long as things are on automatic pilot, we just continue to pile up debt. It's mortgage our kids' future. It's this massive debt burden.
When he says turn it all into discretionary spending, what he means is zero out those budget numbers and then try to justify actually funding it properly. Also close to home, here's Tom Tiffany talking about cutting these very same things. This is on Just the News, cut 8.
It doesn't have to be just the discretionary spending. We can get at some of the mandatory spending also. I mean, like food stamps, some of those things, that's mandatory spending. You know, I think some of the benefits that are paid in regards to the work requirements, I mean, some of that is under the heading of mandatory spending. We can deal with some of that, too. So I'm really encouraged to hear that. And also, boy, the regulatory state, we got to deal with it, because there may be more bang for the buck in terms of growing our economy of making regulatory changes, get the impediments out of the way.
He continues to prattle on. But yeah, that's Tom Tiffany saying, those entitlement programs. Yeah. We should do some cutting there. Here's the math. The House budget requires the Energy and Commerce Committee to cut $880 billion. The House Energy and Commerce Committee only oversees $200 billion of non-Medicaid funding. So where is the other $680 billion in cuts going to come, even if they could zero out all of the non-Medicaid spending that the House Energy and Commerce Committee oversees? From the imaginary place? No. It means they've got to cut at least $680 billion from Medicaid. That's what the House budget bill means. How about this? They also directed the House Agriculture Committee to come up with $230 billion in savings. Some of that, in the same kind of math, is going to have to come out of the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. You know, the things that keeps people fed in this country. And it goes on and on and on. So while it is true that the House budget bill didn't use the words Social Security, SNAP, veterans benefits, didn't require any specific cuts to specific programs, what the House budget bill did was set up mathematical impossibilities that cannot be achieved, cuts that cannot be achieved unless you cut Medicare, cut Medicaid, cut Social Security, cut veterans benefits, and cut the SNAP program. That's the math. If you're as mad about it as I am, don't worry. I've written an angry email that you can send to all of the Wisconsin delegation. You're going to find it on our show notes today. Just go to Maggie Dawn Show at the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us, and check out the show notes for today. You'll find a little sample email for you. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the SAVE Act and how it could disenfranchise tens of thousands of Wisconsinites. Do you want your vote stolen? I don't. Keep it locked right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.